July 3rd. We were there for about 10 days or so. Yeah, so like we were going with Steve and Debbie, as I think a lot of you know. Steve and Debbie are from ELC, English Lake Church in Indiana. And they lived in the Middle East for a few years, and they've been back and forth like a lot of times. And so it was like just like really awesome to go with them because like they speak Arabic and they know a lot of people there and they know the culture. So yeah, so they sort of like planned out the trip. And so the first few days, I mean, like our main thing that we were planning on doing there was going to this church in a town called Mafraq. And it's about 10 kilometers from the Syrian border. And so there's a church there that does a lot of stuff. And so we planned to meet up with them. And that was going to be like the bulk of the trip. But just with organizing it or whatever, we ended up doing, we ended up like getting there and having a few days off before we could go there. So we did some touristy stuff. We saw like, I don't know, the Dead Sea and like Petra and a couple other things, the Jordan River. What? It was really cool. But like, it was like, I mean, those things are like really cool, but like we were like really excited to like sort of start doing like what we like went there to do. And like, yeah, so anyway, so we finally got to this church in Mafraq, and it was like we just got there, we're all tired from sort of like traveling and driving a lot, and like immediately like they sort of like introduce us, and then they're like, all right, we're going out to do some visits with some Syrian refugees. And because they do that like very often, like every day they have I don't know, tons of people go out into the city to where Syrian refugees live, and they meet with them and they bring them supplies and stuff. And so we were sort of part of that. And so we did a lot of visits throughout the week while we were there. I think we all did about two a day. And we just sort of, we did a few other things involved with the church. Like they've got a lot, they do a lot of stuff there. They have English classes where they teach people English, and yeah, they, I don't know, what else do they do? They do like, oh yeah, they have a school for kids, because it's really difficult for a lot of the kids to go to school there. The Syrian kids, sorry. Yeah, there's like, I don't know, a lot of all the Syrians, they can't legally work there, so they have to, they'll get deported back to Syria. They get caught working. There's a lot of stuff like that. And the kids sort of like have a difficult time going to school. But anyway, that's like, we spent time in Mafraq, and then we went to another church, an Iraqi church, in Amman, the capital. And we visited them, and we met up with, do you guys, you remember Fadi when he came and spoke? So, Jared messaged Fadi, to see if he was going to be around at the time, but he wasn't. I think he's in Toronto or something. Oh, he's there now? Oh, we just missed him. So anyway, he gave us his brother's number, Danny. So we called Danny, and he like invited us to his church, and we go there, and he wasn't even there. And so after the service, like we just like, the whole service was in Arabic, so we didn't understand a thing. They gave us these little headphones, and someone's like translating the whole thing. It was really funny. It was really good, but at the end of the service, we were like, all right, where's Danny? And we were like, some people started like coming up to us and like, what are you guys doing here? And because we were just like a bunch of white people. And we're like, we're looking for Danny. And they're like, Danny? Like, he's not here. And so we ended up just hanging out with him for like an hour, and then he shows up, and then we went for like dinner and stuff. And that was sort of like right at the end of the trip. So yeah, that's pretty much the gist of like sort of what we did, and I think each of us are going to sort of share a little experience of something. So I guess I'll go first. I'm holding the mic. Yeah, so right when we got there, we were all tired, and we just met up with the pastor at this church, like right when we pulled in, and he brought us inside. Starts sort of like asking us how our traveling's been, all this, and like I was starting to think like, okay, today's gonna be like a relaxing day. It was like noon or something, and it's like we'll just talk with him, and then we'll like sleep, and then tomorrow we'll start like doing stuff. And then like immediately after like we start like stop talking with him, these people are like, all right, so we rescheduled a visit, and we need two people to go like right now. Four people, yeah, you're right. Katie, yeah, at 12:30. So Katie and I went, along with Davey and Carrie. They're from, some of you know them, English Lake folks. So we all went with this guy named David, a translator, to a Syrian refugee home, to meet up with them. They have like regular visits with them all. So we go to this guy's house, he like lets us inside, and we sort of like sit down in his living room, and it's just like a bunch of like mats on the floor. It's actually really nice. Like all their living rooms are like on the floor. It's like really cool. We have tea and stuff, and we start talking with him, and we tell him who we are and where we're from and sort of what we do, just basic stuff. And then this guy was like really open to like answer any questions we had about his life and like their life in Syria and everything in between, like coming to Jordan and everything. And so we just start talking, and he tells us like a little bit about his life and their sort of journey to Jordan, like sort of fleeing Syria, and told us about three of his brothers that died in bombings, and one of his brothers he hasn't heard it from in like 6 years as they were fleeing Jordan or fleeing Syria. And so like the more and more these people talked, like it was just like crazy, like their lives and what they've seen and what they've been through. And so this family was just a husband and wife and a son, Muhammad. And so we started talking with them all, and I was just like, we were just asking questions. And and the guy's name was Razi, and his son also was trying to flee Syria at the same time as they were. They were sort of, I guess, like in a different area, so they didn't really go together, and he got caught in like some sort of attack, like the big bombing, and he got a bunch of shrapnel in his legs, and he hasn't seen his son in 6 years also. But he was in contact with him, like he could call him and stuff. His son Muhammad, I started asking questions. I asked him how old he was. He was 18, so that makes him like 12 years old when they fled Syria. And so then I was wondering if he had gone to school at all, and so I asked them like if he's gone to school at all since they've been in Syria, and they said that he did go for a short time, but because of the way that the Jordanians treat them, he stopped going to school, and and also the kids in school just treated them really poorly. A lot of it has to do with the population of Mafraq has doubled in like the last 5 years or something, 6 years, 7 years, because of all the Syrians. So now there's more Syrians in Mafraq than Jordanians. And so there's not enough jobs for everyone. So they made laws like no Syrians can work unless you pay a lot of money to get like a permit. And it's pretty much impossible from the amount of money they get from the government each month. They get 10 dinar a month per person, and that is $20 Canadian. And it costs 400 dinar, which is $800 Canadian, to get a permit to work. And so it's pretty much impossible for a lot of them. And so this kid like can't work, and he can't go to school. And like I didn't know what else to ask him. And like, and he has no friends because the Jordanians don't like them. And it was just really, really sad. And like I couldn't. It was tough because like I don't speak Arabic, and we're talking to him through a translator, and like I just want to be this kid's friend, and I can't. And like there's just so much heartbrokenness in like all these people, and like I don't know, it's like really sad. But like there's so many families in this same situation, different circumstances, different experiences, but pretty similar, that have, they're sort of stuck where they are, and like they've seen so much, and there's so much like sadness and like heartbrokenness in the city, in like that city, Mafraq, and like tons of other cities all around, and like other countries in the Middle East. And like we only saw a little bit of like what these people have experienced, and we only met with a few people while we were there, but there's so much more going on. And then at the same time, like this church that was doing so much for these people, like I haven't seen like community like that like that church is doing. They're so involved. It was like incredible. And so on the flip side, like there's so much that God is doing there that you don't see, that you don't hear about. Like all you hear is like the bad things. But yeah, I don't know. Like, yeah, next.
Yeah, it was really good. Before the trip, we kind of talked about different things, and I didn't really have any expectations, and I know I did, but I didn't know what they were. I knew they were somewhere in me, but I didn't really know what they were. So it was kind of a nice feeling. So I was like, well, and I felt God just say, go and see. So it's like, okay, well, go and see. And it just, it felt like such an honor to be there. And Elias and I were together on that first visit, and we're sitting in this home, and we knew like we were going to hear stories. We knew that we were going to listen to really hard things. And part of like what our job was to really like listen and really like respect and honor their story. And like not take it lightly that we were with them and listening to these things, because you see it in the news and you hear about things and you're kind of desensitized to it. And then you're sitting face to face with someone who your family member was chopped up into 100 million pieces. Like, and then you're faced with that. So we're sitting in this home in the first visit, and I think we all just like couldn't really believe what we were experiencing. And this man, Raji, was like the sweetest man. Like, I just like totally culturally wildly inappropriate, but I just like wanted to hug him and like pick him up and like squeeze him because I just loved him. And he was Muslim. The majority of the people that they visit are Muslims. They're not Christians. But he like just had this gigantic heart, and he just like was full of peace. And David, who we were with, who speaks Arabic, he's from the States somewhere. He lived in Lebanon for like 30 years. And he's just like this like really wise, like really cool old man that like, I also just like wanted to pick him up and squeeze him and like, like just like go over it with him because he was so cool. And he was sitting there talking with Raji. And so he's awesome. And just like he was friends with this man, like had built this relationship with him. And so at one point he opened his Bible and they start talking and they're debating, going back and forth. And so he's sort of translating some of it, but not translating all of it, 'cause they were like pretty intense in this debate. And, then he reads out of Philippians 3:20 and he talks about, our citizenship being in heaven. And I've thought about that a lot. And just how like, that's something we've gotten really like caught up in, like citizenship and like nationalism and I sat there and I'm just like, man, like this breaks down everything like right here. And then David paused for a minute, and it was one of the most impactful moments of the trip. He just kind of paused, and it was like he was reflecting just totally within himself, and he just kind of said, he was thinking about citizenship being in heaven, in the kingdom of heaven. And he said, he was talking, kind of around that. And then he just said like, well, at least that's the kind of kingdom I want to be a part of. And I don't even remember like exactly what he was talking about, but it was this moment in time where like, I just stopped, and it's like I just froze, and we all kind of froze, and it was like this moment of like heaven meeting earth in this room of like, and this man just sat there and listened to it, and it was like the love of Jesus was just like completely poured into that room with his family. And I don't know, it was incredible. But anyway, one of the things that I was just struck with was just over and over and over, just being faced with humanity, and that, like, we're all humans. I remember talking to Mohammed, and I didn't know, like, how appropriate it was my first visit. I didn't know how, like, appropriate it was for me to, like, talk to Mohammed, because we're not really, like, I had to, like, sit in a different part of the room, sort of, and, like, I didn't know if I could, like, make eye contact with him. So I'm, like, whispering over, like, Davey and Elise, like, ask Mohammed questions, because I just, like, felt like this boy, like, there's something, like, this boy, like, needs to be seen. And one of the things that I really wanted to ask him about was, like, what do you, I think I had one of the boys ask, but I was like, what do you want to do? Like, what did you want to do before all of this happened? Like, what's your dreams? What's your hopes? Because you just got this sense of, like, hopelessness in him. And, like, all of us just were so sad for him. There was just this sense of, like, that's how a lot of people feel. And especially that age, like, they're kind of coming into themselves, and it should be this time where they get to explore life and the world. And it was like, that's not a possibility for him right now. And that's heartbreaking. And we're listening to his dad, like, talk about old stories of, like, when he went to Lebanon and when he was here and he went skiing here. And I'm just sitting there like, his son is sitting here listening to all this and he can't do any of that. He's like, literally goes out, like, once a week and, like, stays in their apartment and can't do anything else. But anyway, there's so many stories like that I could tell you. The last thing that I kind of want to share is just, we got taken to another home. It was just myself and another guy, Seth, with David again. And, he was telling us how this man, had become a believer. He's a Muslim and he's been visiting with him, and he has become a believer. So we go in the house, and after kind of, like, chatting a little bit and you're hearing different things, David kind of just got right into it. So he's opening his Bible and they're just, like, challenging each other and going back and forth. And this guy is, like, literally quoting scripture, like, back and front. And I'm like, this is crazy. Like, this, like, he's like, it's like 30-year-old Muslim man who, like, I don't know how educated he would have been, but, like, he knew the scripture inside and out. And so they're going back and forth, and we heard a lot about how, like, visions and dreams are something that are huge, and that are just, like, tons of Muslims are experiencing that, and, like, that's how they're coming to Jesus. And so we just kind of left there, and I was just thinking about how, like, I'm not doing anything by, like, being here. Like, I'm just here, and I'm, like, a grateful participant and just, like, listening to you. And, like, I don't know why that's meaningful to them, but it is. It's meaningful to me as well. But you just sit there and you're like, man, like, God is doing it. Like, God's revealing himself. Like, nobody's doing anything in that way. Like, we can, like, show them love, and we can show them kindness, and we can hear them and see them as humans. But, like, God is, like, revealing himself to them. And that was the coolest thing. And that was the thing that built the most, like, faith in my heart, of just, like, holy cow. Like, yeah, I've never seen anything like that before. But we could all talk for days, so I'm going to stop.
Yeah, just off of what Katie's saying about how, like, we didn't really do anything. Like, we were going there to be exposed and to learn and to experience, I guess. And we just, like, went along wherever we were told and, like, did what we were told. And, we I don't know. It was all Jesus. Like, Pastor Noor, the pastor of the church in Muffrog, when we first got there, Elias, like, he kind of said already, he, like, introduced himself and got to know us a little bit. And he learned all of our names, like, memorized all of our names. And there were, like, dozens of other people just like us at his church, and he knew all of our names. He was an amazing man. Anyway, one of the things that he said to us was, like, you guys, Jesus is here. Like, he's here in this place. And, like, I think all of us, like, needed to hear that. It was just, like, yeah, I believe you. And we hadn't even, like, experienced it yet, but he said it, and we were like, okay, like, we need to hear that. Yeah, just, like, we just arrived and, like, we're tired, but we were like, thank you for saying that. Yeah, and then we went on that those first visits, and like right away, like Jesus is here. He's with them already. Like before we came, like Jesus is there already. And Steve and Debbie on one of their visits, they went to a house of it was a wife and husband, and I don't know if they had kids. I think they had kids. Anyways, this woman, she'd had a dream, just as one of these examples of Jesus being there. She had a dream, and she was walking along a wall, just walking along a wall, and there was a hole in the wall. And so she looks in the hole, and there's a well in a room in the wall. So she goes to the well, and there's a man there. And she says, "Who are you?" And he said, "I am Jesus." And he said, "What do you want?" She said, "I'm thirsty." He said, "Drink. Drink as much as you want." You know, like she had this dream, like no one told her this. She had a dream. And like we've read that story. Like we know that story. And like I think I believed in Jesus before I went on this trip, but like I believe in him. Yeah. It's just like, it's true. It's happening. It's real. So I hope it's encouraging to you guys. Yeah. So just another thing, Jared and I got a word from Shane before we left. ELC, they all laid hands on us and prayed for us and gave us words and encouragement before we went on the trip. And Shane said, like, he saw a picture of our hearts and they were just like getting bigger and bigger. He said, like, your hearts are going to be enlarged for people. And that happened too. Just by going, and like it can happen here too, just by going and being with people who are different from yourself and listening to their stories, like your hearts grow. And for example, one home that I got to visit, I don't think any of you guys were with me, but this woman, she was like so joyful. She reminded me of like one of my friends, like one of you guys. Like we just like have so much fun together when we're all together, all of us girls, and like get a little wild and like just have so much fun. This lady, like when I looked at her, I was like, I want to be your friend. She had like invited us over for dinner. Like they'd visited her the day before and she said, like, come back tomorrow. Like, I want to have you guys for dinner. And like, she lived in like this little shack. It had like a tin roof. The floor was dirt, but covered in vinyl. So it looked like a floor, but like really wasn't. Yeah, like she had nothing, but she made us this like delicious meal. She made these like stuffed zucchinis and eggplants and tasted like my mom's cabbage rolls. It was like delicious food. And she made so, so much. Like when we finished eating, it looked like we hadn't eaten anything. And there were like 12 of us there. And she had three girls and like her husband was out working because like they need him to do that. Yeah, and she made us all this food and was so joyful. Just like when we first got there, so you're supposed to have your head covered in Muslim culture, like as women. And her head wasn't covered. And like our translator was like, cover your head. There's men here. And she was like, why should I hide my beauty? And like, she just reminded me of like myself or like one of my friends. And yeah, just like the whole time we were eating, I'm just like staring at her, like watching her smile and laugh and like be goofy. And like, she has like nothing. Like she lost everything. She lived in like a mansion and like literally had everything that she wanted. Like, and she like has depression and takes antidepressants because it's like so hard for her, but she is like still like full of joy. Yeah, I'm just like staring at her like, who wouldn't want you to like be with them? Who wouldn't want you in their home? And like, it's just like so honoring to be invited into someone's home and like given all that they have. And like, it's like nothing I've ever experienced. And like she has something that I want, and like, yeah, I think it's like something that we need, this like hospitality that they have.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a ton of stuff that we could share with you guys, but we don't really have the time to do that. So I just want to encourage everybody, like, if you guys want to chat with us, we would love to chat, like, after or later or during the week. But yeah, I just want to tell just like a little story. So this was our last visit, or my last visit anyways. And you know, Elias went with this girl, Sarah, from ELC, and we walked into this home, and we kind of got some background on the family situation. Like, there was a mother and like her mother and father-in-law, and I think her mother was there, or no, sorry, she wasn't. But she had three kids, a son, two daughters. And she hasn't seen her husband in 6 years as well. And so these kids, they have no father. And these kids they're beaten on the regular by their uncle and by their grandparents. And it's just, it's awful. And while we were there, even like they had like this wooden stick, and like the one son, something happened and she hit him and he ran away crying. And, she told him, like, why do you cry like a girl? Like, you shouldn't cry. So it was just, like, a very abusive just situation. It's just, like, it's so sad. Yeah. Yeah. And she, like, was staying, like, she was in, like, her room the whole night. Like, she just, like, stays in there all the time. And then while we were there, so, like, there was the grandfather. He was just sitting in the corner. He had a stroke, like a little while ago or something. And like his hand was all withered, and, he was just sitting there. Like he can't talk. He can barely walk. And we were about to leave, and, I had asked, John, our translator, I was like, can we pray for this man? So me and Elias and our translator, we went, we gathered around him, and we laid our hands on him and we prayed for him. And while we were praying for him, he just started to cry. And after we prayed for him, he grabbed us all, and he gave us a kiss on the cheek. Then we got up, and he was just so grateful. He kept saying, thank you, thank you. And then we went back and we sat down, and then we were getting up to leave a little later. We got up to leave, and this man, he stood up, and he like already, like he can barely walk, but he stood up. And it's funny, because when we first came in, like he was sitting, and like we went and greeted him and like shook his hand, but he didn't get up. And when we're leaving, he gets up. And as we're walking by him, we're saying bye to him, he kisses us all three times on the cheek. And he kissed Elias, and then he kissed our translator, John, and then I was the last person to leave the room, and he kissed me three times. And then I just felt like I needed to like tell him I love him, but I can't. And like, I can't speak Arabic. And like, I just like grabbed him by the shoulder and like just looked in his eyes, and he just started bawling his eyes out. And, it was the most impactful part of this trip, just seeing this Muslim man, just old man, just bawl his eyes out. And we were told so many times leading up to this trip, like all we can really do is just like convey, like all we can convey to these people is that we are here for you. And like, we want to stand with you, and we want to cry with you. We want to pray with you. And that's what we did. And I was just like looking at this man's eyes, like water. Like I felt like I saw Jesus in this guy's eyes. And Steve, like our leader of the trip, he said, like imagine going home and telling people that you saw the eyes of Jesus, or he saw Jesus in the eyes of a Muslim man. And it was just like, it blew my mind. But I was just reminded of this verse. In Psalm 34. So this was kind of like a verse that God had shared with me before we went to Mafraq. But he said, it says in Psalm 34:18, the Lord is near to the brokenhearted, and he saves the crushed in spirit. And as we were just like having all these crazy experiences, thinking about this verse, the Lord is near to the brokenhearted. Like, he is near to the brokenhearted. And I was just pondering this verse like the whole week. Like, I want to go to the brokenhearted, because that's where the Spirit of the Lord is. Like, that's where we can encounter God. And like, he is there, and we just have to go to the brokenhearted. And we can do that here. Like, there are brokenhearted people all around us. It's not just in Syria, although like that is like an intense example of brokenheartedness. But there are people, probably brokenhearted people in this room. And like, so yeah, like, I don't know. I was just encouraged by like this trip and like this church in Mafraq, just how they devote everything to like these people that are so broken, and they just want to love them and support them and provide for them. And it was just such a great example of what the local church is and what we should be. But yeah, I'm going to stop talking because we kind of already went over our time. But I just want to say, like, from us, like, thank you for your prayers. Thank you for supporting us and sending us on this trip, because it was awesome. And yeah.
So like right at the end of the trip, and I think this is something that all four of us, and like our friends from Indiana that came with us, that we all sort of took away, and like, so we were driving away from Mafraq, the city, after we just spent time there visiting all these people and meeting with lots of Muslims and lots of people that are working there long term and short term. And so we were driving away, and Debbie Heinold, sitting in the front seat, and I was behind her, and I was just like thinking, we were driving away, and I was just thinking of like the whole trip so far. It was near the end, and I just like let out like a big sigh, and because it was just like overwhelming, everything. It was like a sigh of like joy, though. It wasn't like, I don't know, it wasn't sad. It was good. Like, and I think I said something like, man, I can't believe like that church in Mafraq. And Debbie was like, first thing she asked was like, were you ever afraid? And like, I said, no. Like, I don't think any of us at any point during the whole trip were afraid. And it can be such a sort of idea here in the West that the Middle East is something to fear, and the people there, and Muslims and Islam, is something to fear. But I saw like some of the most beautiful people I've ever seen in my life there, and I've been treated so well by some of the people there. And like, we don't need to fear, we just need to understand people and be with them and like love them. So here you go, Brad.
Well, that's good. Thank you guys. Yeah. Yeah. That's good. I find it like just sitting here listening to you guys and just being struck by the timing of your trip, and just, you know, remembering that so the refugee family that we're sponsoring, have we heard any updates on timing on when they're arriving? But still in the next, could be 2-3 weeks, month, who knows. And just that, yeah, so a family that likely has very similar stories to the ones you guys heard from families there is coming to us. And we have the exact same opportunity to do what these four talked about for this family for a year, maybe more, maybe less, who knows, right? And I'm struck by that. And so actually, made you guys sit down. Could you guys come up again? No, sit down. No, wait, come up. No. I just want to get you guys to pray for us as a church family in regards to this, because, you know, this is potentially going to be our story for the next year. And to have a family that's been through these sorts of things and to be able to love on them and minister to them and to encounter Jesus in their midst the way these guys have with these families they met with. And so in a second, I'm just going to get them to pray and just to ask for, you know, an impartation of the same heart for us as a church, that we would, you know, that we would, that we would adopt that same spirit of the hospitality, like you mentioned, Lydia, and just that our heart would be to go to them, not just to fulfill duties that we signed up to do, but that our heart would be to go to them and to sit with them and to love on them, right? That's, we don't want to do the bare minimum. We want to love on these people, right? Also, it was interesting. We were looking at what we want to talk about for the summer. I was thinking about over the last few months, and Elsa Marie was like, I really think we need to talk about hospitality and just the thing of opening our homes and just a connection between when we learn how to be hospitable to each other. We actually, there's something in there where we learn to host the presence of the Lord better as well, when we learn to host each other well. And so it just really struck me, Lydia, when you said, I think we need to learn more about hospitality.